What's with this knockout game? Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, November 26th. We will talk with a guest criminologist about the knockout game, which involves teens assaulting strangers and trying to knock them out with one punch. And we'll also talk about the intense media coverage that this has received over the past couple of weeks. What's going on here? Are the media hyping this? How can it be stopped? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let me welcome our guest. We are happy to have with us Jeffrey Butts, Director of the Research and Evaluation Center at John Jay College of Criminal Justice at City University of New York. He is a former director of the Program on Youth Justice at the Urban Institute in Washington, D.C., and a senior research associate at the National Center for Juvenile Justice in Pittsburgh. He has also written two books and managed several research projects, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Hello.
Well, so is this some new trend? What is this knockout game?
Well, the trend, I think it is a new trend in the sense that we're seeing so many media stories about this right now, and there probably has been a slight increase in just the number of incidents, very, very few incidents, but if it went from 3 to 6, perhaps, in the last few weeks, you could call that a trend.
Well, you know, I remember when I first saw a story last week on this in some other city, I remember a mini burst of these in Madison, like almost a year ago. So it happened here quite some time ago. So I was surprised to see such national attention.
Yeah, and I've heard people. I have not done much work on this myself, trying to find the old records or old incidents. But I have had people that I trust tell me that there was a case very similar to this in Massachusetts in the early 90s. There were. Another friend told me that he remembers hearing about, as you say, a small little burst of these cases around college campus in Ohio in the 1980s. So it's not obviously new behavior. I think it has new context, and maybe that's why it's taken off into this kind of national news story.
Yeah, and what do you mean by new context?
Media is more pervasive than it was even 10 years ago, and people have access to their own media and generate their own media. And I think also the prevalence of security cameras and CCTV monitors, because a lot of the videos that we've seen on broadcast media have come from those security cameras.
So what do criminologists think is going on here? What do the police think is going on here? Why are teens sucker punching random strangers?
Well, the first thing a criminologist does when this comes up is to roll their eyes, because we've all been through what my late colleague Jock Young at one time called moral panic, that a story takes hold, usually because it has some gripping image associated with it, and people become fixated on the chance that this could happen to them. And I certainly understand that. I see the videos that the television broadcasters run, and it's horrifying to think that someone could just step into your path and in about a second's time and pop you in the face and you go down. So that's understandable. It's horrifying. But the probability is so low, and the incidence rate is so low that it has to be considered a fluke. And so a criminologist, when you ask them, first of all, we would object to calling this a trend because no one actually has data on this. We don't know if the incidents are increasing or just awareness, coverage, and discussion about this is increasing. And there tends to be an overreaction to it. But all it takes is one articulate victim who tells us what it felt like and what their experience was, and it's hard to get that story out of your mind.
Yeah, the kids that have done this are not doing this to rob anybody. They're doing it to try to punch people out.
Well, a couple things on that front. I've done a number of interviews over the past week or so, and I have heard from a number of people, and some of those people include my own colleagues who are objecting to the way we're talking about this, using the term kids, using the term teens. Most of these incidents do not have an identified perpetrator.
Okay.
So we do not know their ages. And there is, as you, I don't know how old you are, but as I get older, I find that I do use the word kids to refer to anyone under perhaps 25. And most of the people who I would think are engaged in this, there could only be a dozen or so, but we don't really know. But of those, I would guess that just based upon the behavioral profile, that most of them are probably between the ages of 15 and 21. And half of those people would be legally adults. So if we use the term kids advisedly, that's one issue, that they may not be all teens. They may not be all, certainly not all juveniles.
Noted.
And the other thing about that is the reason they do it, why they do it, is, and whether it's another motive beyond just mayhem, if there's a robbery motive, we also don't know that. But there's one video that's in circulation that shows after someone hits someone in the face and that person falls to the pavement, that they stop and appear to start going through their pockets. That, though, is the less common result. Most of the time, right after the assault, you can see that everyone runs. So I don't think it's robbery. At least robbery's not the predominant motive. It seems to be just for the thrill of throwing a punch and getting away with it.
Yeah, the Milwaukee County Sheriff, David Clark, is warning people about this. He recently said that not alerting the public is an ineffective crime prevention strategy. So how big a deal is this? Should we be on guard when we go out in public now?
Well, sure, on guard, but how? What's the action you take to be on guard? Does that mean every time you're walking in public and you see someone walking toward you who appears to be under the age of 21 or so, that you flinch as they come past you? Do you always make sure you have 4 feet between you? Do you duck into a storefront if they're walking directly? How do you implement being on your guard? I have heard people say that at least you should like be aware of your surroundings. I'm as at fault as this as anyone else. I walk around New York City here all the time with my earbuds in, so I have soundtrack and don't have to hear all the taxis. Mm-hmm. And that's probably bad behavior because you become oblivious to your surroundings. But I'm not sure, other than just a general recommendation that you be aware of who's around you, I'm not sure exactly how the public should be on guard or take measures to protect themselves.
Yeah. Carry pepper spray or...
Right.
Yeah. You were critical of news coverage of this recently, telling the Pittsburgh Tribune that the media's reaction has been hysterical. What's hysterical about it?
Well, you used the word hype in the opening, mm-hmm. or your producer did. I don't think I would use the word hype because that implies that the media are exaggerating the importance, exaggerating the significance of the story. So I wouldn't use that word. I think I use the word hysterical because it's a dramatic reaction to a very low probability event. I said to someone yesterday, it's like the contrast between how we feel when we get behind the wheel of a car versus how we feel when we're on an airplane. And when you're on an airplane and you don't fly that often, you've heard those stories, you've seen the video of the smoking hulk of a jet that's crashed, it sticks in your mind more because every time a plane goes down, there's national, international media coverage. We hear about plane crashes in South America. We see video and images. We do not see the hundreds and thousands of potential images associated with automobile crashes, and we just don't think about it as much, and we're more accustomed to taking that risk, even though the probability of injury and death from driving a car is much, much higher than from flying an airplane. So the hysterical component of this is the reaction to something which is incredibly rare.
Yeah, and do we have any evidence whether intense media coverage of something like this makes it happen more or less?
Well, that's always a concern. It seems logical that if you have a young person who is isolated, perhaps unemployed, nothing to do with their time except hang out with their friends, that seeing these media stories could perhaps tip the scales. But It's a really hard thing to pin down. I have not investigated this myself. Perhaps some of your listeners know that apparently there is a variant of this behavior in the video game Grand Theft Auto that players can simply walk up to another player and execute a command, and the character on screen takes a swing at that person, and they can be knocked out. And so there's speculation that maybe some of the excitement about this game is coming from those images from the video game. And I don't know. But in terms of media coverage, the one thing I said to a reporter the other day was I wish the visual media, television, would do the story without showing the images of these assaults over and over. I saw one station recently that the entire time they were talking about it, which was perhaps 45 to 60 seconds, the half a dozen known assaults that were filmed were on a constant loop, and I think each assault was shown perhaps five times during the course of their conversation. And that's just irresponsible to me.
We are talking with Jeffrey Butts. He is director of the Research and Evaluation Center at John Jay College of Criminal Justice at City University of New York. And we are talking about this so-called knockout game and the media coverage of it. And we welcome your questions. We welcome your reactions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 21 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, November 26th. We are talking about the growing number of stories that we are seeing in the news about young people punching random people, trying to knock them unconscious. They're being reported across the country, and we are talking with a guest criminologist who says that the media is reacting hysterically to the matter, and we're wondering what you think. How concerned are you about the knockout game? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Or maybe you have questions about the perpetrators or the point or the cause or the cure for the so-called knockout game. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I wanted to ask you, Jeffrey Butts, a well-known African-American columnist in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee, expressed concern about the media coverage of the knockout game and went so far as to say that he thought that this was, in a way, instilling fear in the public to be afraid of young black men. What's your reaction to that?
Well, the racial component of this has been disturbing. I started getting calls about this just about a week ago, and I responded to calls, meaning media calls, and I responded to the first few without doing any background work myself and finding out why this was happening, why this sudden explosion of interest. And I found that there was an episode or perhaps a series of conversations on Fox TV where this was being discussed. And it was not being discussed as a problem of crime or youth misbehavior. It was a problem of the, as they always like to say, the mainstream media. And there was a particular episode of the Bill O'Reilly show that I found on YouTube in which they were saying that the main problem here is that these are young African-American men who are striking people walking on the street, and that the media was covering this up by not acknowledging that fact. Well, first of all, it's not all African-Americans. It depends on what neighborhood, depends on the time frame. Some of the more notorious incidents going back over the 20 years have been of different races. But the angle on that, the fact that they had fueled their audience into thinking that this was a media cover-up to not focus on the race of the people in the videos, inspired a lot of anger. And after I was on a couple radio programs and one television interview, I started getting all this hate mail from people saying that I was an idiot, saying I was part of the problem, I was covering up, I was a typical liberal academic and all that stuff. And this really took me by surprise until I found these clips. And then I realized that that one program, or maybe it was a series of programs, sort of set the frame for that story. I think the focusing on the race of the people you see in the video is just wrongheaded, because it's not about their race. It'd be like me saying, every time I hear about Wall Street crooks, they're always white guys, and the media always cover that up. The media is not focusing on the fact that these are white guys doing this crime. Focusing on the race of the person, I think it's sort of the definition of racism to focus on the race first. And I think if you look across all the incidents, it's clear that it's not about race. It's about, as most things do with crime, it's about poverty, it's about isolation, it's about being disconnected from other mainstream institutions, being not in school, not employed. And those things are independent of race. Now, this is America, so they often are correlated with race. But to focus on race as the causal factor or as the principal factor is really inappropriate and incorrect.
Yeah. I remember, again, this was just, this was so long, about a year ago in Madison, I thought there was some sort of gang initiation aspect to this so-called knockout game, but other reports, maybe the earlier ones, were suggesting that the attacks were racially motivated, because in at least one situation, apparently black teens were targeting Jews in Brooklyn. And you say that this conclusion's premature, though.
Yes. Race, ethnicity, and in the case of the Hasidim in Crown Heights, all those things are visible markers of otherness. So you would refer to this and using the term social distance. If I'm going to victimize someone who I don't know just for the simple reason I want to victimize someone, I'm not going to look for someone on the street who looks like me, looks like someone I went to high school with, they dress like me, they come from the same neighborhood. I'm going to be more inclined to victimize someone who has some distance from me socially. So if I'm 15 and I see a person coming at me who's 50, that's distance. If I see someone who's of a different race, that's distance. If I see someone dressed clearly belonging to a different religious faith, that's also distance. So in Crown Heights, there's a very large Hasidic community, and you can't walk through some neighborhoods of Crown Heights without passing multiple people who are dressed to convey their religious affiliation. So it just makes sense that that would happen. I just think it's leaping to conclusions based upon too few data points to think that this is a hate crime or it's racially or religiously motivated.
Robert in Green Bay is with us. Hello, Robert.
Hi. Earlier, your guest made a comment about Grand Theft Auto, and it almost seemed like he was partially blaming video games on this current trend of punching people. But I just don't want video games to be blamed for another sensationalized act of violence. Grand Theft Auto sold millions of copies on the first day it came out, and if it caused violence, there'd be millions of people attacking each other, and that's just not the case. Video games take the brunt of a lot of these acts of violence that come out, and I just there's no correlation between violence and real life.
Thank you very much, Robert. We're coming up on news. A brief reaction to that.
I totally agree with that. And I hope I didn't convey that I believed it was causal, because I think that's clearly not the case.
Right. You just said that there's an episode where this happens in that particular game where people punch out a stranger.
Yes. And that could be why we're all talking about it, or it could be that's part of the cultural context in which this is happening. But clearly, watching a video game does not cause someone to become violent.
And you say, though, it is time that we stop calling this a game. And I've seen that, too, because it's not very funny.
Yes. We should call it something like stranger assault or sudden assault, or I don't know, some NPR or national radio, public radio listeners should perhaps hold a contest to rename this. Mm-hmm. And it may be too late because the language has taken hold. But I wish the word game had not been associated with this whole thing.
Well, we talked a lot about the media coverage. In our final minute, how does law enforcement need to respond to this? How does this particular type of crime get dealt with?
Well, I think law enforcement needs to be aware of this and respond to public concern about it. I'm not sure what they can do to prevent it, just because of how it happens. The other thing that can happen, I think, is greater ties between communities and law enforcement. When these videos emerge, and again, there are only a half a dozen or so which are available, you can't, as a stranger, you can't tell who the person is. Sometimes you can't even see their face. It's just an outline. But anyone who you really know, if you see an image of your 14-year-old son walking and you can't see any faces, you can tell who it is by how they move. And I think it would be helpful if people seeing these videos would reach out to law enforcement and say, you know, in that one video I just saw, I think that might be my downstairs neighbor, or I think that could be the young man who lives across the street. If this becomes less anonymous and the young people doing this are held to account for their behavior, it may seem less funny eventually.
Thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Jeffrey Butts is Director of Research and Evaluation at the College of Criminal Justice at City University of New York.